Hi, I'm Andy Farnell, and you're listening to The Cyber Show. In today's Cyber Show on the go, Ed and Helen are out at Sandbanks Beach. It's one of the wealthiest areas in Europe, and unfortunately, home to one of the most noise-polluted beaches in the south of England. Just behind the drone of private helicopters, jet skis and powerboats, you might just about be able to make them out, talking about the ruin that money inflicts upon technology and, through it, upon society at large. First up is a discussion of big tech leadership as being predominantly personality disordered, attracting narcissistic egotism. Should more toxic leaders be ousted in coups and rebellions at the corporate level? This recording was made on the 24th of June, 2023.
Today's date, I feel like that's a very poignant moment today, right? The news this morning that broke,
which feels that
considering we've been in a cyber war for 30 years.
Yeah, so currently live on BBC News, the mercenaries seize Russian military sites as Putin vows to punish rebellion. I wonder what set that off. So I wonder what intel they've got that's caused them to choose today. Or maybe they all just got fed up and thought, you know what? It's nice weather out, we'll just go. nice sunny day for a coup.
You know what? I like the Russian people, and I quite like the Russian history.
Yeah.
We have a society that's very authoritarian. Because if you push a country too far, it will just, the soldiers will turn on you.
Yeah.
They'll overthrow you.
Well, that's what we were saying about turning the tide a little bit here, but corporate structures and shitty managers.
And then
they all have the rebellions internally in these companies, and they just push people so hard, and they go, you know what, stuff it, we're done.
So what we're doing is we're compelling Elon Musk right now to Vladimir Putin, because actually they are a very similar cat of the fish, aren't they?
Yeah.
Because a CEO is not that dissimilar to a president of an authoritarian country.
Especially with the amount of power that one of those companies, big tech companies, has.
Exactly.
More than most countries in the world.
Imagine this, we're comparing big tech companies right now to a dictator.
That's going to get our Amazon account shut down. Good job.
Oh, that went longer time ago.
Have you heard about the cage fight that Mark Zuckerberg has just accepted against Elon Musk?
Are they both jiu-jitsu masters? I'm quite excited. I think that's the most exciting news I've heard from the tech world.
I think Mark Zuckerberg said he was going to get formal training.
Oh, so he's down.
Like, jiu-jitsu.
What I've seen him in something. He does some sort of martial arts, so...
Yeah.
Is that a thing? Is that a tech thing? Is that a tech thing? Is there this weird, like, little culture
know.
In, like... Because he's not the only celebrity
a lot of these sort of tech leaders do these other sports, don't they? Like, on Independence Day in America...
Right.
There was that picture that Mark Zuckerberg put up on his Facebook account when he was, like, surfing. And everyone just made, like, hundreds of memes out of it because he looks so alien. He's
exactly.
like...
Exactly.
How do I stand? Like, what do I do here?
He is so pale. That man never leaves his office. So whenever he goes on something like that, I'm instantly like, oh, this is a good publishing. You know, I mean, there's some marketing here.
Yeah, there's a picture of him where he's got this shelf up in the background, and he's like, you can see the thought process. He's like, what do I put on this shelf that makes me look like a human? He's
and
like, I know.
Paid people.
Barbecue sauce. Slaps it on the back of this.
Someone got paid a lot of money to make that decision.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
what there was a whole stage set. I bet in, like, there was this whole planning process for it.
Someone's job.
Yeah.
Someone's job.
Job to make him look human.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. They won't be called, like, the humanist.
No.
They'll be called, like, his, management, public image manager.
Yeah.
Which just means that he goes, can you look a little less like you never leave and a little bit less sweaty? Like, you're normally out in sunshine somehow. Let's get some fake stuff on you.
Yeah.
That didn't work.
No.
What do we do now? Isn't smile. Don't smile, no. Because when he smiles, it's like something goes wrong.
He stares into your soul and you almost get creeped out. You're like, stop doing that.
It's like Mr. Burns. He's like a young Mr. Burns
from The Simpsons, yeah.
He can't smile either. He's like a billionaire. He's just like, I don't care.
It just seems those billionaires, they just can't smile. Well, they do smile physically, but when you look at them smiling, you think, something's not right there.
Not all of them, but there's definitely soulless. A category of a certain type of human.
Mm.
And I can bring it back right now, back to the Vladimir Putin. And I guess it's this selfish dictator. It's a dictator, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
We've all got a dictator in our friendship group. We've all got a dictator in our family.
Yeah.
You know? Is it who's going to make the decision on what the family watch? Well, it's one of us.
Yeah.
because we're the more dominant people in the household, unfortunately for everyone else. At least someone's placid. But that micro goes across the macro. And family, yeah, there's always going to be someone who makes decisions in your family. But I'm not like that in any other environment, but some people have to be.
Yeah.
And I think that the people that we've just mentioned, the three names there, are that personality type. And there are other types as well. And our societies generally benefit those people.
Yeah.
And that's the issue. And technology itself has been benefiting that sort of dictator type.
Yeah.
Can we, first off, let's discuss, is this coup a good thing? Probably not. I mean, it could end the war. It could perpetuate a civil war. It could cause more harm for the areas that were taken over.
Yeah, it's
by Russia.
Coup in general is not a good thing, but it depends on the context. But I don't think there's going to be a positive outcome.
I think when it comes to someone like Russia, all we've done is remove one head of the Hydra, so a new one's going to grow. And we don't know the shape and the form of the new one, and I think that's quite terrifying. Mm. And I guess that's the same as a tech company. And I know it's like a weird comparison, but it's not some tech companies. I guess it's the ones that don't do very nice things. We all know that Facebook don't do very nice things. Yeah. We all know that Twitter, since Elon Musk has come along, has taken all the people that were banned for some really horrible things, homophobia, some really outrageous opinions, sharing misinformation, really disgusting graphic content. They've all just been allowed back on. That's not a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
It's not a nice thing. Facebook are not a nice company. They have so many privacy violations. There's an awful court case.
They don't care as long as it makes the money, do they?
So there is a class action lawsuit going through at the moment against Facebook. And it's from women who have been proven. So they've come out, they've escaped sex trafficking. And they're in Western countries. And they've, together with a fantastic, and I don't know her name, we're doing cyber on the go, so I'm on the beach, we're not using our tech. What she's done is she's put the case in right at the last minute, didn't tell anybody until it was the subpoenas had gone in.
Yeah.
And she is going to prove, and these women are going to prove en masse, that Facebook not only facilitated them to be sold as sex slaves across their platform, but they actually made it easier and better to do so.
No, that's
not a
good.
Nice company.
That's not, no.
That's not a nice company. That's not a good situation to be in. And that's not a moral person. And I think that's the comparison that we're making here, is we're saying about immoral, greedy, money-obsessed people that our societies actually reward in their current format.
Yeah, I mean, what you say about money is kind of the root of all evil. And I think when we look at it that way, when I compared big tech, I think in the context of big tech here, when we look at what they're worth in compared to like GDP of countries, and you have, I think the exact order was USA number one, China number two, UK number three, and then it was like big tech.
Yeah.
If you sort of group all of big tech's power, because money is kind of power in our society at the moment. And I think at that point, they just say, oh, look, another fine, who cares? We're just going to run our platform how we want to because we've got the money to do so.
Oh, exactly. And the fines are ridiculous.
And they just lawyer up to the eyeballs and get on with their own agendas.
I guess if Facebook was split up and those employees had to go somewhere else, or there's some sort of coup within the company and someone else takes over, would it change those companies in the way? And I think this is where that comparison comes in again. Isn't it just removing the head of a Hydra? Because they're so big.
It's like these multinational companies that own lots of other companies. It's the same horrible spider, you've just given it more legs.
Right. So it's the culture in itself, or it's the corruption. And I think that's what we're looking at here, is that if you have a system, no matter whether that's a country, a business, or any other type of system, that rewards dictator, greedy, selfish, immoral behaviour over moral behaviour, then you're never going to have a good outcome from that. And actually, you're going to breed that expectation into your society or your company or your way of living to the point where you can't ever remove it because you've become corrupt as a nature.
Yeah.
And actually, the Russian people themselves are not corrupt. They are really good people. Like I said, they are the people that will be fucked with the least out of everyone. They are Viking, most of them, by descent, and you can bloody tell. You know, the Russians I've met have been some of the funnest and most level-headed people, and yet you look at their history and you think, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think that's an issue because it's become so ingrained because of rewarding, and it's because they've got a lot of gas, they've got a lot of oil, they have a lot of money, and it breeds that corruption. Unless it's curtailed from the beginning. And because the gas and the oil rush was so fast, I don't think they had time someone just, there were a very small group of people just made loads of money really quickly, and now they've got it. You can't really do anything about that. And I think that is the comparison right there with big tech companies, because that's exactly what happened there. They got market dominance, all that money, and it built corruption in from its core.
Yeah, and I think that big tech sort of came around. There was no such thing. In 2005, Facebook was founded, and similar with Google and all the other big five now. They're sort of those big conglomerates that were founded before there were even laws about internet technology. I mean, you have the basic...
Right, no. E-commerce law doesn't really... No. It's rubbish.
Yeah.
We don't have any rights for digital, you know, privacy.
I think our only hope is if this online safety bill pulls through. And obviously this is only in the sort of UK, EU area. And the problem is all these companies are US-based.
And they don't have to abide by those rules. As we're aware as well, with the online safety laws and the current GDPR and the European GDPR, we haven't had any fines, actually, that we've managed to get from America, because it's very difficult when you phone up your much bigger, richer friend and go, hi, no, remember me, the guy sort of follows you around and picks up your rubbish and does your bidding, just so I can ride in your limo. Hi, cool. Can you give me a load of money? You pissed me off. You owe me. And they're like, no, I don't think so.
I mean, I suppose the only power we have by fining them from this end is that if they don't pay the fine, then the government's just going to sanction them and say, oh, OK, well, you can't use your services in the UK or EU area.
Which, and as we're the second market, I guess we're the only people in the world that can go, yeah, OK, all right, Amazon, leave. Go on. Because we are one of the countries that could go, okay, cool, fuck off.
Yeah.
It's okay, because I've got loads of fucking techies here. Remember where computers came from? Who invented the internet? Was that you entirely? Or was there an English guy over there who did most of it?
Yeah.
And if you just pop to the London Museum, you just pop on that top floor and on the bottom, it's all over the place, actually. You'll find out who made it. Oh, yeah. So we'll probably be okay, actually, if you take Amazon away.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll go through as a society the amount of dependence we have on platforms that Amazon provide. I think we'll go through a grieving period where everyone's going to be like, oh no, what am I going to do now? And they went, oh yeah, there's actual real shops I can walk into. I forgot about that.
Are there real shops though? There's not many real shops anymore.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? I don't know. It would be interesting to see what would happen to the economy if...
We'd just get Amazon UK. It'd just be called, like, I don't know, some shit English rainforest. Dartmoor. That's about as desolate as Amazon's sort of business model, isn't it? Dartmoor, yellow and dead.
Yeah.
So we look at the Amazon that recently got chopped down, covered in oil from cocaine usage and burnt. That's the image of the real Amazon they were going for.
It would just be called, like...
I swear they've actually been responsible for cutting down some of the rainforest in some regard. I swear they've been connected to it for their parcels.
Mm. Because obviously the amount of power, they've got so many warehouses and things like that all over the world.
They use a lot of paper.
The amount of paper and power.
At least it's not plastic anymore. Like, I feel like...
Coal.
Well done for not using plastic. You are doing quite a lot, actually, with greening up your business, which is responsible and it's good, and we like that. But
I think we'll nice them for a minute. There's a few things I've noticed recently, which is Prime deliveries now will come in recyclable either cardboard or paper packaging. And their delivery vans, they're starting to use electric in places, like also companies like DPD in the UK, they led that really, but starting to see companies like Amazon following suit with that.
Mm.
So I think in terms of carbon footprint and damage to the physical environment, if we ignore the human side of things and how they treat their workers for
the
a
privacy.
Minute. And the privacy,
the dictator sort of
the ring doorbells
there.
And everything else.
The conversation moves to identify imposter nerds, leaders who play on appearing geeky, but in fact lack all of the true characteristics of reflective intelligence. Are the likes of Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg actually fake nerds? What does it mean, and does it bode well at all, when the leaders of powerful organisations resort to public gladiatorial spectacles because they're not intelligent enough to settle their differences with words? Is it all just a bit of harmless fun, or are we being foolish to allow such people to continue acting as so-called thought leaders?
I think that annoys me the most about Jeff Bezos is that he's been reliant on the technical class, I would call us. We are kind of a technical class. We're a weird bunch, right? We are. Yeah. We're a bunch of guys who hide in our house all the time and interact with computers and sci-fi 24/7, just like Jeff Bezos. And thank you for personally funding the Expanse. You saved it from the abyss. But why would you take William Shatner to space and then land and then interrupt him and blow your bottle top? Hey, fuck him, old man.
You just could just alienate in all of us. Spaceship,
like, like, thanks for PR stuff. Fuck off. You may as well just throw him in a ditch, honestly.
But just let him go out, float out to space, never to be seen again.
Alienate your fucking core product.
It literally
users.
Become an alien.
Like that was just like, you go away.
Yeah.
Like, on one hand, just as a sci-fi nerd, as a nerd, I was like, he's a bit like us, isn't he? It's not that bad, is it? Maybe he gets a bad rap, and then it's like, did you just diss William Shatner? Took him all the way to space for a PR stunt and even let him talk?
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, you're not a nerd. Get out. I knew it.
I think it's interesting because they all start from like those really innocent points, don't they? It's like, oh, we made this business in our garage and I slept in the garage whilst I was coding.
And they pretend they're nerds.
All this foundation story crap that they just spout out just to make people think, oh, they
nerds
really
are usually
hard.
Kind, aren't they? I think when we look at stereotypical nerds, they're kind people.
Yeah.
So I say they pretend nerds because they're not kind people. They're money, not all, but there are a certain type. And I've met some really, really good people. I've worked with some really good people who run businesses you've not heard of. They're actually massive because they're not front-end systems. They're back-end systems that support things that you probably use every single day. Yeah. Those people, all of them, didn't go and work in Google because they're not that type of person. And they're generally moral. And I'd say they're the nerds. They're moral. Yeah, They've watched things like Star Trek from a young age like I have. Mm-hmm. And it's really imprinted on them that they've got to be kind and conscientious. And that comes with understanding nature and science and things that you do and mathematics and it comes with that inquisitive mind. It should come with it. It should be that you want to read books because you're a nerd and you read loads of books and you come to a conclusion that we only got where we are as human beings by cooperation and sharing and the sharing of resources and the sharing of knowledge. And although we do have wars, we've only really developed technology and ways of living and civilization in times of peace, actually. And I guess what I hoped is when the nerds inherit the world, that would come through. But we seem to be, again, back to our main comparison for this, there are these dictators, these dictator-type personalities within the technical world that have got somewhere.
Yeah, I like to think that there is some human foundation that we can pull back out of them at some point. And that I think they started with good. And there just seems to be something that switches their mind as they...
Corruption.
That one word summary is corruption, But I think it's...
Money corrupts, right? And you can go in with the best intentions, but once you go past a certain threshold and you have a large amount of money in the bank, I generally believe, and there is a lot of psychological information on this, and I think we could go back and we could get Kate in on this as well and go speak to her in a minute and say, tell us all about this, because there's a lot of data on that, actually, that there's almost a figure or a borderline where if you go above that, it does corrupt you, and it does. I guess your ego can run away with that. And it doesn't happen to everybody, and it depends what you do with that money. It depends where it goes.
Yeah.
Bill Gates is a good example of that. I don't think he has. He's used his money. He's invested it in humanity instead of himself, and that's the line there. And that I think is quite very hard to do.
No, I can't remember what exact year it was, but Bill Gates donated around 95% of his net worth to charity.
He's not giving away his money to his children predominantly. They've done very well because they had money, and he understands privilege. Yeah. And his children understand privilege, and so they have foregone their a large proportion, I believe, it might be all of it, of their of their inheritance, which is all going to go to charity. But he's like the king of nerds in my eyes, because that's where, so he gets such a bad rap from the internet because they're afraid of him, because he doesn't spend that money on himself, because he's not that dictator class, because he is a proper nerd, because he's using his money to make a physical difference to everybody. And it almost equally, in a much more egalitarian sense, he's trying to share things, the wealth out a little bit. And I guess that if you're very conservative and you're in the other side, you might see that as, I think he's got a very good balance. I think he can see that.
I think he's a well-informed person. And as you were saying about the book stuff, he is a massive reader and writer for the same reason. I think no matter what your views are, I think people that absorb a lot of literature and they listen to others.
Educated people.
They become
highly educated.
And I think in general, I think if we had a more highly educated population, those sorts of people, like Bill Gates, wouldn't be as superior as people make them out to be.
It would become the normality.
It would be, I think, yeah. I think there's a disconnect from the majority. I'm not saying everyone needs to go and be an academic.
Because there's something wrong with nerds, actually, isn't there? Where instead of enjoying ourselves or relaxing, this is what we do to it. We sit in beautiful locations and talk hardcore stuff that other people struggle to read.
Just
want
so we can
read.
Sleep tonight without thinking about it.
Literally, it's gonna be in there anyway.
Yeah.
You know, most people just sit on the beach, I think, and just chill out. Some people have silence in their brain. That's great.
So, yeah, I remember someone saying to me they could look at a brick wall and think of nothing. I'm like, excuse
what?
Me?
But I remember having this conversation where they said, I have whole moments of time where I don't have a monologue in my brain.
Yeah, yeah.
I've had someone that I once dated said that they don't have any internal monologue. I've got a friend without an internal monologue. I'd like just a moment of peace.
Yeah.
I have to go through a 45-minute hardcore yoga session, and I might just be able to shut my brain up for about 30 seconds at the end of that, because it's very difficult. It takes quite an extreme amount, and that's because, nerds are a bit broken.
I think it's, when you get to that sort of high level of thinking constantly...
It's just like a really high-powered processor.
It's not, like, doing nothing. It's distracting it to do something else instead. You can never turn it off. You just distract it to something else.
It's too much app data, just background processes running all of the time, even while sleeping, it feels.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what's going on.
You wake up and you're like, I can fix the bug now.
But your CPU's like strong enough that you can handle it. So it's just a bit more of a supercomputer. I guess that's what nerds have. It's just like a knowledge supercomputer going on in here. It just doesn't shut up. It needs feeding all of the time. And I guess money can corrupt that.
Mm.
And that's quite a scary thought, actually.
Yeah.
Let's be moral, because that's a true nerd in my eyes, is someone who is moral, someone who cares about humanity, cares about our future. And that relates to not just scientists, as all sciences. I'd say most scientists are humanists. They care about human
development. I think that's the sort of link we're making there as well, isn't it? It's when we're talking about nerds in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Nerds are also generally well-informed people, and I think that's where it comes from.
Yeah.
It's people that just don't shut out and bury their head in the sand and pretend that everything's okay and it's me, me, me.
And don't fit in with the norm as well. They don't follow the crowd and say, oh, well, I'm going to do what you do. I've just always done what I feel is right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very aware that I've been made aware as a child that that's very abnormal.
Yeah.
And that reading books all the time is not particularly a very normal thing to do.
Mm.
And that's fine, it isn't. But it doesn't mean that we need to hide away, or it doesn't mean that we use that money.
I think it's a shame that it isn't, though. I think books are... Some people will just be listening now thinking, oh, you absolute geek.
Nerds.
But
hey, it's a nerd podcast. That's what we do. Because you know what? Well, the internet has made more of us nerds. And nerds is a thing now, because there's a lot of nerds around. Who's not using ChatGPT right now? Hey, guys, you think you're not nerds listening?
Slowly,
And
everyone.
You're using ChatGPT? You're becoming one.
Nerdness is seeking into everyone's skin very slowly.
Every time you put a prompt in, you're learning computer science.
Yeah,
you're one of us soon. Two types of sort of nerd, isn't there?
Mm.
Moral ones.
And big tech leaders.
Yeah. And are we going to get to a point where they're too big and it's just a hydra now? There's no way to chop it up, to get rid of it. Chop it up, that sounds so bad. I don't mean like that.
I think though, what we want to kind of lead into is these big tech nerds that we're talking about, because they are very aware and they know what people are like and they've got teams around them that can... Yeah, because they've got endless money to throw at whatever they want.
Yeah,
they can study the human and how the general populace will respond to certain new technologies and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at things like the Ring doorbell, every single... Well, you can tell on your own road, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're probably one of the very few houses that doesn't even have one. And people think, oh, this is an amazing technology. I can protect myself and I can see everything that's going on. But they don't look at the bigger picture of, like, who else is looking at this? Oh, it's connecting to Amazon servers. I wonder what they're using this data for. And even Tesla, when we were talking about that, they're not a car company. They're a data company.
I feel safer because I don't have a Ring doorbell on my house, and I don't have cameras in my home because I feel that a burglary, the chances of that happening. So I've had two attempts. I live in an area, it's high burglary area, that's why they have so many cameras. In a mega city, it does happen. And I heard someone try and get in my front door, and I think that they... I've got one of those front doors that if you haven't done something on the inside, and it's clearly in my insurance, if you haven't properly locked it on the inside with your key, like five bloody times, it's ridiculous.
Multi-point locks.
Yeah, you can stick like a hanger through and you can pull it open. So ever since I've moved in, and we locked ourselves out and we physically did it ourselves and got ourselves back into the property very, very quickly. We realised that we do definitely need to lock this door.
Hang on a minute,
right,
someone
now.
Else can do this.
Yeah, as someone who's much more skilled. Like, this is us just fumbling about and within 30 seconds it just came open, the door. And this is a new door, it's not an old door. We were very clear, and when we obviously, this is around the same time that we first moved into the property and we've done the insurance claim, and we saw, why is this door model saying that we need all this like severe security on it? Okay, it's not a secure door. So I heard them doing that, and the door will actually wobble around when they're trying to get in, because it's a little bit of a weird frame, so it just makes a noise. So I heard that, and I woke up in the middle of the night actually. And that's because when we do the things that we do, you are fucking paranoid. You are. I feel that I'm well trained enough and paranoid enough because of the work that I do to not get burgled. And I would feel far more unsafe with cameras all over my, even ones that I'm controlling through my own web server.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm
still unsafe.
What we think about Ring doorbell, I'm not saying the idea of that is a terrible idea.
Because it's an IoT device.
Yeah, it's an IoT device, and it's not linked to your own systems.
And we're relying on companies to regulate themselves when it comes to access over over that technology. And I think what we're seeing, especially when we talk about privacy, is it becomes more of a problem in countries that don't have a GDPR.
Yeah.
We have a GDPR. Every workplace here, we know about the GDPR. We follow the GDPR. If you don't, I mean, most do. I've worked in some that don't give a toss.
Yeah.
Oh, it doesn't matter if we don't get caught. It's like, you get big enough, you'll get caught. And then you won't know what to do and be caught with your pants around your ankles. That's not a good way to do your business.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about the way people just think about privacy now. And I've heard so many people make jokes like, oh yeah, they're definitely listening to my phone or this, that and the other. But it's kind of turned into me, myself and big tech rather than... It's like you think your privacy is protected, but it's no longer at the individual level. You think, oh yeah, just only me and Google know what's going on in my life. And that's just been normalised.
It has. And someone made a very good argument the other day. And it's because they know a little bit, but they went into their computer science 20, 30 years ago now. So they know more than a little bit. They're very professional, but they only know a little bit about security and about... AI and things like that. So, it's okay. I mean, if they spy on all of us, there's so much data now, true, but no one can process it all. Okay, have you heard of AI and quantum computing?
Yeah.
Because that's very, and the new processors that have come out, that's very rapidly changing. And that's the stuff that we know about. That's not what our security service and militaries have in the top countries in the world. If we have that now, if we're just seeing that now, that's already been combined and it's way down the line. And it's stuff that we don't even know about, and we won't know about until we're bloody old. So, it won't even look like the world that we're in right now to us, but at that period in time. But there's already people doing that and living that and doing that every day in their jobs, actually. And that technology is being used at that point first. So we don't really know whether that's true anymore. So this data can be crunched. And those companies now have the money and the skill and the drive. You can, companies like IBM will only open a graduate program for 24 hours because the amount of applications they receive in 24 hours will crash their servers because of their name. So they are getting some of the best talent in the world, these companies, because of their size, because of their name.
Well,
including
kind of,
moral ones and immoral ones.
Yeah, it's kind of with that. I spoke about the bathtub curve on a different recording, and it's basically this theory about the longer a product or entity has existed, the more it's technically reliable. And I think it's being used in the wrong regard, with people thinking, oh, so it must be amazing. It must be like, oh, we can definitely trust that. It's not going to be a problem. I'm going to just do Google certifications because I know that they've been around for so long. Yeah, so in 1996, because Google's been... I wasn't even born.
You weren't even born?
Years.
And I had the internet in 1996, and then I was getting... My teacher's like, you've made the most amazing work in the world, and I'd gone on Wikipedia and pressed print. I was in primary school then, though.
And now people go onto Wikipedia, paste it into ChatGPT, and then press print.
Good news is that your teacher already did it and printed out the top 500 things.
The teacher wrote the homework in ChatGPT. Let's
yeah, they wrote the question. In fact, I would hope that the ChatGPT can mark the work now for them. If the kids are going to cheat, the teachers can cheat too, right? Get the marking done for you.
It's going to be ChatGPT's questions marking ChatGPT's answers.
So would a coup work in a technical company that's corrupt?
I mean, it depends what kind of... what sort of way it happens and what power the employees have and what the worst case scenario is for the organisation. And when we talk about the organisation, if the entire organisation except the leader is on board for a coup, then yeah, they're gone, they're finished. It's like so easy to...
You made the point, right? There's some really good people that work at Amazon.
Yeah,
right?
There's good people
that... Because they're pushing
There's genuinely brilliant engineers that work for every big tech company.
Exactly, and we said that with the applications, they're open. So there are good people that work for them.
Yeah.
So
if
you remove... Maybe, you know, if when Elon's done with Twitter, which at some point he will, because that's his MO,
well,
isn't
he's
it?
Assigned a new CEO
there
to start in another year or something like
will
that.
Will that improve the company? Hopefully. Mm. But I don't know. And that's the same question. And I guess that's the same question that goes on to our world stage and our governments and our societies, actually, and they're very similar. Mm. And yeah, that's almost a micro and a macro again here. Companies are very small. They're very rich, but they're very small versions of almost countries in their own right. Mm. And I don't know, I think some companies, it could change, but I guess it would be very slow. For someone like Amazon to change their core working practices to adopt a new way of working, maybe one that's complete opposite, where they encourage, you know, openness and you have HR surveys that go out every week to find out if you're happy at work. Imagine that.
Yeah.
And the bosses were suddenly told that actually it's not about so much money, it's about how happy your employees are because it improves their productivity. Like, they should read those papers. But
there was this scene. Yeah, there was this scene in Silicon Valley, which I have to send it to you so you can watch it. Spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't watched it. They start off in a room in someone's house called Ehrlich. They call it the incubator because all startup companies start in his house. They finally move into this massive office and they employ this woman to do HR for them.
Uh-oh.
And she brings out this new system where employees can vote on each other and how they get on in the office and generally how they're enjoying it. And all the developers... They all have really low personality, like, approachable ratings.
Oh.
And the HR lady comes over and says, well, guys, you know, you need to improve this. So then they get on board and they all vote against the HR lady saying, oh, yeah, she's horrible.
And
they're just playing this game of cat and mouse all the time. And it's just...
And this is why we need women in tech.
Yes.
So women are not the HR people only.
Yeah.
And then the people doing the tech are over here.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Let's switch this up a bit. Yeah. Let's have some men work in HR. And let's have some... Because there are problems that men have that are men-specific. They might only want to go to a man, too. In most workplaces I've had, the HR team have all been women.
Mm.
And let's... more women get employed into tech because we do exist. Mm. I work in a building. In fact, one of my HR ladies that I've worked with in the past is pretty much like one qualification away from where I am. She's played video games from a young age. She's got a sick-ass computer at home. She builds her own. She knows her stuff. Quite easy to go into IT.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
She's been put off by it.
Yeah.
That's a big problem. And I think that's a big point. And that's something that's just come out of it. We need more balance.
Yeah.
Right, that wouldn't happen. Yeah. Those men wouldn't be unapproachable.
Mm.
And if you've got a balanced team in your IT team, your development team, whatever, your security team, when you have to send people to deliver bad news, it's sometimes very easy to tell people off. It might be better to send the more fun, approachable lady if you've got one.
I think in Twitter's case, before Elon Musk bought it, I think he fired 90% of the staff team or something. And then he's like, oh, the company still runs. They're all just useless people doing useless things.
This is what I was on about.
With useless data.
About dictators and why I brought him up. Because he fires everybody to that extent in every company, but like randomly because he had a bad day.
Yeah.
Like, that is dictator.
Yeah.
Like, if he ran a country, just kill him.
Yeah.
I swear to God, he'd come in and go, oh, your face has upset me today. You're all dead now. Honestly, it's quite concerning. At least he has a company and not a country. But if that company gets, you know, if he accidentally has a company that is really big, is it not, like you were saying, he is running a country. And so that comparison is definitely there now.
Yeah, when you consider the monetary value, it certainly is bigger than most countries as well. Technically, with the amount of influence they have.
Yeah, money equals power.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, every Ring doorbell or every iPhone that sold more power and more back doors in more countries. So that's where your power is, where your products are, is where your power is.
And it's not just going to be, if you buy an iPhone, it's not just America that's got a back door in there. I'm sure there's a few other nations with a back door in there.
Well, no, they're all manufactured in China, aren't they?
Well, you know, I wasn't going to go down that road, but I'm sure some other countries also went, while we're there, can we also buy that?
Yeah.
And there we're all friends, so that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking here about, it's just a fight between governments, really, isn't it? It's the exact same thing with this cage fight that we're talking about with Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg. It's just the world leaders, big tech leaders,
We've definitely got an opposite, and we've got the real nerds and then we've got the mean nerds.
Yeah,
and mean nerds to me are not nerds, because mean nerds, they're just not nerds. They're just not. They're entrepreneurs, that's what they are.
I mean, I think the problem is when you get to the billionaire sort of level of personal
monetary value.
Bill Gates doesn't do that
because he gives it all away. He goes, I've got an F, take it, I don't want it, it will fuck me up.
Sure.
That's the right nerd, actually. Mm. And there are people who work in these back-end companies in really high positions that earn a ridiculous amount of money, who very, very clearly do not want to get corrupted by it. They don't want to go out and fly their private jet around the world and go on lavish holidays everywhere and then go and tell the newspaper all about it. Mm. Go get a musician girlfriend and go and turn up to clubs and pose through all the cameras. That's not their MO. They're proper nerds. They want to change the world for the good, do the right thing, make a difference with the skills that they have, because they are knowledgeable and because they've read enough philosophy and they understand and they know enough of history. Mm. Because they're nerds, because we're broken, because we read too many books and our brains don't shut up. We should understand that we are only got where we are as humans by sharing. To some extent, by resource management and helping one another, our sick, our old, and our children, and our disabled need assistance.
Mm-hmm. In this last segment, Helen and Ed discuss how, while trying so hard to hold inclusive values, our technological society actually creates, perhaps more than ever, precisely the conditions that exclude and marginalise the, quote, wrong sorts of people.
I mean, look at some of the best people that we've ever had have been disabled in some regard, or a little bit strange. Imagine people like Einstein in Stephen Hawking in caveman era. They would be absolutely like gods, because they'd probably be only one. All of the tribes, for as far as you know and could ever walk to in your life, and there's this one strange man, but he blinks and we dictate. And the knowledge that comes from them. And then they become like an actual martyr and an actual god. And they, you know. And of course, we would have looked after those people. And that's because you don't need legs to use your brain. Mm. Necessarily. Mm. And you can have those illnesses. Or autism. Autism's a big thing, isn't it? Mm. That must have seemed very strange if you were the only person with autism, as far as the eye could see. Because it would have been rarer when there were less people. Mm. And it has risen. Maybe it's our detection. But I'd imagine that if you had someone with a very high-level, high-functioning thing like ASD, where they were the only child maybe that anyone had encountered that couldn't be touched, and as they grew up, they just did math.
Got their stone
out and their chisel and created mathematics and created numbers, created language.
I know there was a man that passed away recently, and he was the first person ever to be diagnosed with autism.
Yes,
I've forgotten his name
now. Very late.
I'll have to fill it in. But it was, the diagnosis, I think, was in the 80s.
Very late.
We're not even talking a very long period here.
No.
40 years or so. It hasn't really... Only now we're accepting this as...
And
you're not just
around.
A crazy person.
Yeah. It's always been around. I'm fascinated when people look at things like Leonardo da Vinci, and they do look at Einstein, and they do think he had ASD, and da Vinci as well, because they're very high-functioning... IQ, and when you get that, you sometimes have to, you start thinking, well, hang on, is it as a result, like, did autism come with it? Because when you have a high-functioning intelligence, it is actually some, at that level, and I mean like 150-plus IQ, when you're at that level, it does mean that you sometimes have there are two main arteries that run through your brain, one on the left and one on the right. One is your intelligence centre and one is your social centre. And to get that high level intelligence, that vein in that side of your brain that dictates your intelligence needs to be a little bit bigger, so it grows a bit bigger, but it grows into the space at the other side. And autism in itself is when that shift has become too much in the direction actually of intelligence. It doesn't dictate that everybody who has autism is more intelligent, because sometimes it's different parts of that intelligence that's growing or infected or different parts of the brain, but they do have a skill. They do end up with a superpower. It's fucking amazing. And we need them. They would have been like gods in our society. They would have been rare as shit. We have more now. I think, you know, we know that there are other environmental factors that are driving it to go up as we go into the modern age. But it was there, and it does increase our intelligence.
Yeah, and I think what we're doing now as a society is the brain imbalance that comes from someone who's on the autistic spectrum. Yeah, as a society, we are working to correct that imbalance by using those people who are really skillful in a particular set of skills. Mm-hmm. and then applying that to someone else who's really skillful in another set of skills.
Before,
were just diagnosing them as crazies and like just kicking them to the side and saying, oh, you're useless.
And when we did say, oh, you've got autism, this is what it is now, you're disabled, you go in that flat, please, and you don't work.
Yeah,
and I'm saying that I don't think we would have done that. And we can look back at people like Da Vinci and Einstein.
Yeah.
As psychologists, really good, like autism psychologists, they were writing quite a lot of work, those two people, lots of other people that are prominent figures as well. And you can pretty much diagnose it from that now.
Yeah.
And you can realise that people like that were famed. People flocked to them for that intelligence.
Yeah,
and if they did have quite high-level ASD, they would have been very rare at that time period, or at least there was no knowledge of it, and rarer in a sense as well. Mm. And people weren't as horrible, and they were generally more supportive, I generally believe. Than we are now. Once it got diagnosed, we were less supportive. And I think the further you go back, there were more support for people like that. And we have always probably looked after people like
Stephen Hawking.
Yeah. You know, he would have been like the most intelligent young man ever. And then he got sick and we would have still needed his intelligence. We still would have been on to, we would have looked after him because he would have been worth 100 able-bodied men.
Yeah, I don't know though. I think you're right in what you're saying, but I think also generally, I think on average now, as a worldwide population, I think the acceptance, becoming much better at integrating people that have autism into more official roles and better responsibilities and a sense of purpose.
We are.
And that's what we are. I think that's what we should be proud of now as a society is, yes, there was support there at a personal level, but I think now, as a society, we are accepting it and we are saying, yes, well, they're also just as equal as everyone else.
Well, I mean, Silicon Valley, the episode that you're talking about, says it a lot, isn't there? There's a disproportionate number of people with autism spectrum disorders or similar go into technology. And
we can literally say...
Higher intelligent means you probably want to read books more often.
Yeah.
So you're going to become a nerd.
Yeah.
My friend's son, he has autism. He was a nerd from about age 6. He would save up questions to come and ask his mum's nerd friend. That was me. And I loved it. He's been my little adult friend since 6.
Yeah.
And as he's aged, nothing has changed. Yeah. He just got his adult brain at 6 years old. He's 13 now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, when can I start asking you questions? I know it's coming very quickly because you're that smart, my friend.
Yeah.
Do you know what, though? He gets so much support because he's just awesome. And I can see his career is going to be amazing. Mm. And he will be supported by his workplace. He'll be supported by his friendship group. Not just because he's intelligent, because he's just an awesome person. Mm. Because he's got great parents. They don't say, oh, you've got autism, so you can't. They say, you do autism, so you have to work harder, but you can. Yeah. Let's go do it.
I think it's this whole,
let's find out how to do it.
Yeah, it's this not looking at people as themselves, as people, and looking at them as their diagnosis is the wrong way to look about it, I think. You look at a candidate and you think, oh, you'd be really amazing at doing that exact thing, or... yes, you're going to belong very well in this role, rather than just saying, oh, look, it says you've got autism on this piece of paper.
But then we have to think about insurance companies, and there's a lot of workplaces, particularly in the UK, because of the way that it's set up, that, okay, well, we can only employ... We as a company totally support disability, but we've been placed under a restriction because we are this type of company and we have this risk assessment and these health needs from our health and safety policy that we've been set on us.
Yeah.
Means that we have to use a third-party insurer.
Yeah.
And you have to have insurance in case something happens to you because this is a dangerous environment, whatever that may be.
Mm.
And then the health insurer goes, sorry, is that a wheelchair? Dangerous, can't have it. And we're going to do an episode on that, and we're going to talk to someone, aren't we?
Yeah.
That we graduated with.
Yeah.
He was bloody skilled.
Yeah.
And he's worked himself up. He's worked himself up with polio.
Mm.
So, I mean, the fact that he managed to even leave his country and make that much wealth with polio, with a disability in Nigeria, by his own fruition, his own wealth.
He is living proof of tenacity.
Amazing.
Yeah.
He's had two fantastic children. He's got the most wonderful, supportive wife, and they've moved over here, and they are fantastic, and he's so skilled. He's the exact person that we want to attract to our country, that our country is more able to support with their needs. I mean, you know, he gets the right job. He's got a new foot. He's got rid of his polio issue because he could get a biological... Mm. I mean, when he discovered that, he could walk again.
Yeah.
That's not possible where he was from. It's not possible. No matter what he earned, he'd have to go to America, get the surgery, stay over there for weeks on end.
Yeah.
That's not an easy thing to do when you're coming from somewhere like Nigeria and you're going in straight to a hospital.
Yeah.
It's tough. But he could do that here, working for years on end and going, right, I'm going to go and get a bio leg. And he could turn up wearing trousers in 10 years' time. So that's the life he should have. And then it wouldn't be a problem. Then he wouldn't be an insurance problem. But he's got a massive barrier to him right now. And that's it. In IT, there are insurance companies that apparently means he can't do those jobs. And that seems to be. He's going to the same job interviews as the rest of us in his chair. And he can't get in the buildings where the IT equipment is, or he can't reach at the top without straining himself, or he can't climb on the ladders that you may need to use to reach the top patching switches that are up there. I mean, he physically can, but there are those laws where they say, well, this is a dangerous building, so you can't do it. Or this is a dangerous room within our building because it's got lots of electrical equipment, and someone's decided. Work with an IT engineer right now who's heavily pregnant. She's, I think, about 2 weeks left until she's due, and she's working right up to the due date, and she is a legend. She's going to be on our show, actually, after she's had the baby, because she's got so many good things to say.
Yeah.
And it's going to be great. But the reason I bring this up is being pregnant is very similar at that late stage, and we've adapted. Because we have great laws, we have great maternity support, great laws. Yeah. She's not allowed to lift things. She can't lift things. She can't reach things. She definitely can't climb a ladder.
Yeah.
Not in her state, it's not safe. So I do it, or one of our other colleagues does it. And we plan that in, and it's no hassle whatsoever. Yeah. So when an insurance company, and you know that it's got to be a private insurance company, from when you go through the same employment processes for the same sort of companies, and you realise that there's a third-party insurer, and they make the decision, and this is why, and it's in your contract.
Yeah.
And it's because you handle a server room, and there's lots of electricity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that electricity could put you in danger means your network's shit anyway. I mean,
I think we're still in the early stage of... I think we've got a long way to come as a society until we get to a level where every human is treated with respect and decency and integrated in the correct way into society, how they want to belong.
It's an incredibly slow process, isn't it?
Yeah, as I was literally saying earlier, the first person diagnosed with autism was in the 80s. When we look at it like that, we're still as humans in such the beginning.
Well, Andy is definitely not doing the music today. He must have a little bike or something.
Unless it's the ice cream boat. And it's just echoing. Yeah, there is an ice cream boat.
We got to swim out.
They attach a rope to your boat in the middle of a channel.
Wait, do you want ice cream? Imagine a pirate ice cream. He pretends to sell you ice cream, but it's just an international...
Oh, and he's just a pirate. Is that not Big Tech with their like products? It's like, oh, look, here's some ice cream. Oh, shit, I've got all your data now.
Yeah. Hey, guys, get a smartphone. Well, who's smart? Yeah. Not you for buying one.
We're smarter. For you having it.
Yeah, we called it smart and then you were bored, it makes you dumb. Why? Because I have all your data, it's worth more than gold. Says the corrupt one, and now he's running off, and the rest of the techies are like, we're not all like that. We're real nerds, that's not a nerd, that's an entrepreneur. I mean, like, some of these people don't actually make the products that they even sell. They're just the entrepreneur that funded it.
You've been listening to The Cyber Show on www.cybershow.uk with Ed Nevard, Helen Blues, and me, Andy Farnell. Tune in again soon for another episode. Thanks for listening.